This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, you're listening to the Politics Without the Boring Bits podcast. I'm not Matt Chorley. I'm Patrick Maguire with you for the rest of this week. Hope you had a lovely Easter weekend. I'm delighted to be with you this week, not least because today we have a fantastic podcast. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the Labour left. Lots of big names from the Corbynite flank of Sir Keir Starmer's party have concluded they have no future in the opposition just as it approaches government. Are they right? We'll be talking about that in just a moment. But first, time for a teaser of this week's episode of How to Win an Election. Political masterminds Danny Finkelstein, Peter Mandelson and Polly McKenzie are answering your questions. But before all of that, we're going to kick things off with listener Rowan, who's got us a podcast poem.
Hi Matt, it's Rowan here. I've written you a poem. Strike up the band, cries Times Radio's Matt, the hardest working political podcaster who even fasted like Sunak. Peter's seen it from every side, even coaxed back with yoghurt by Gordon. And as Lord President of the Council, he could have carried the sword, not Penny Mordaunt. For Danny, he has yet to be persuaded that much will move the dial. Ding, 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 goes Matt's bell. But it's based on facts, Danny says with a smile. Here's Polly McKenzie, the artist formerly known as Nick Clegg's Brain, which must have looked weird on LinkedIn, but better than some of Peter's nicknames. We get the inside scoop on PMs. Polly was lent a towel by Theresa May, who had told Danny no early election, and then ruined Matt's holiday. The flat-pack furniture bromance didn't happen. Nick Clegg wasn't even his friend, and Dave wouldn't have shown it to Danny if half of it was made by Lib Dems. So come and listen to the podcast, and be fair to Ed Miliband. This is How to Win an Election. Strike up the band!
Oh, that was good.
I thought at first it was going to rhyme, and I was thinking, God, that's not...
No, it's a very modern very sort of poem.
But actually, I think it was much better for the fact that it didn't.
There was a light rhyme.
I thought it was... Yeah, no, there was. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was very accomplished. And also, incredible attention to detail.
Yeah, there's bits I'd forgotten.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Really, really good, that was.
I would love to have carried Penny Mordaunt's sword.
Would you?
Oh, God, yes.
Hi, guys. This is James in London, and I love your podcast. This is an election year, and the Tory media, as in the Mail, Telegraph, GB News, are going all out attacking the Labour Party. But is their right-leaning readership, viewership only interested in voting either Tory or Reform? So, will their impact on Labour be pretty much less than zero?
I don't think the Telegraph and the Mail have a huge influence on Labour voting, quite honestly, because I don't think they have a vast number of Labour voters reading their newspapers. I think they play a very big part in the internal politics of the Conservative Party. I think they sort of turn different wings and factions and groups and aspirants against each other, and they cause a lot of mischief. But the reason why the newspapers and their endorsement of parties is less important is because the whole newspaper industry is less important than it used to be. There's such a proliferation of different sorts of media now, all generating their own different forms of influence. And actually, I think the broadcasters pay less attention to where the newspapers are leaning. But there will be a very interesting question come the election later this year, if it's not in January, Bonnie, over where the Sun goes, because the Sun is still the most significant single newspaper in the country. Like it or loathe it, that's what it is. And their endorsement of Labour, of New Labour and Blair in 1997 was, in my view, very influential. So here's the question. Given that the Sun, you know, doesn't like to fly in the face of its own readers and would prefer to sort of follow and go in the direction that their voters want, and given that the pollster Sir John Curtis is saying now it's, what, a 99% chance of Labour winning, which success will involve an enormous number of Sun voters voting Labour, if it's true, what does the Sun do in those circumstances? Does it sort of continue to lean right, as its preference might be, because it doesn't really trust Labour fully? Or does it say, no, the country's got to change, we need a new government, but, you know, if it's Starmer, okay, we'll continue to hold his feet to the fire.
So, first of all, obviously, there's also a Labour press as well as a Tory press. And I think that's quite...
Where's the Labour press?
Well, The Guardian, for example, is Labour press, and so is The Mirror. And there's a reason for raising that, because does The Guardian have an influence on the Tories, right? It's just the same way of looking at the question that was asked about the Tories and Labour. And the answer is yes, because sometimes it publishes extraordinary scoops that have caused, for example, the Parsi story. The answer to your question is, I don't think it makes much difference to the Parsis, even at Westminster. Let's leave aside the question of how important campaigning is at all. When a newspaper merely publishes an attack or an op-ed, you know, which is an opinion column on politics, is in the Tory press, I don't have much difference on Labour. But if an important story is broken by those papers who are looking for stories to kind of antagonise the people their readers don't like, because in the case of the Mail, for example, there's still a very heavy Tory readership, then that can have an influence, because it will then cause a story that, you know, Labour has to cope with for days. So I think in the end, as Peter's just pointed out, newspapers are they represent their readers, and they don't have a free choice. You know, the Times didn't, for example, have a totally free choice about which position it took on the European referendum. I think our readers would have found supporting Brexit an odd position for the paper, given who our readers are.
The Sunday Times bat leave, and the Sun bat leave.
The Sun did, you know,
while all being part of the same organisation.
Absolutely. The Sunday Times, I thought, was unusual in the sense that I felt that its readers almost certainly didn't, and the paper did. But it's not usual for those papers to buck what their readers think. The interesting thing about the Sun, I think, you know, some of the tension with the Sun is just caused by the fact that the leader of the Labour Party was director of public prosecutions and tried to put various of the Sun journalists and executives in jail, and I suspect that may influence them, whereas otherwise these natural forces might kick in.
It would, though, Paul, even we allow for the fact that fewer newspapers are sold and everyone's more promiscuous and reading news from a whole load of sources rather than laying out the printed newspaper on the breakfast table. Were the Sun to back Keir Starmer at some point in the run-up to the election, that becomes a news story, doesn't it, rather than a moderately interesting leader column.
Yeah, I don't think anyone reads leader columns, no. Do they? Really? But so,
I mean, obviously, I. This, but
you read the
Western
Times
the Western Daily Mail.
I do. You know, obviously, for the benefit of the tape, I do read all of the Times' leaders every day.
Of course, you do. Of course, it's in your job contract. But it is one of these sort of ecosystem stories. But even though that doesn't necessarily mean it's kind of reaching millions of people who go, oh, yes, I shall vote Labour because the Sun says so. And I absolutely must follow what it says on whatever, you know, this is not how people behave. But the impact it can have in the ecosystem is important. It can give people a sense of confidence and ambition. It could send the Conservatives into even more of a sort of flat spin. And that then has these sort of ripple effects. And of course, part of the reason the Sun might pick Labour is because they don't like to back losers. And I think lots of voters are a bit like that as well. You know, a sort of strong horse view. Like, you just want to be on the side of the winners. And so the more this kind of starts to crystallize a sense of momentum, the more weird it will feel for lots of individual swing voters to, you want to stick with the guys who are on the way out? Like, why not sort of pre-book yourself a slot on the winning team and just go with the flow?
So there you go. That's your amuse-bouche for this week's episode of How to Win an Election. Remember to look that up wherever you get your podcasts from. It really is unmissable insight every week.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Big Thing.
Jeremy Corbyn will not stand for Labour at the next general election as a Labour Party candidate.
Jeremy Corbyn has had his moment in the sun, his star has faded, the organisation that gave him momentum in both senses of the term, the momentum named organisation, has subsided and slunk away.
I want to tell Mr Starmer above all that the plates have shifted tonight.
Labour Party's been a big part of me, but today I've quit. Why would you want the same policies that led this country to catastrophe just with different faces at the top?
Yes, if you want to know what Sir Keir Starmer stands for, there's a simple answer. I'm not Jeremy Corbyn. That, at least, is what the Labour leader says. Now, his predecessor has been kicked out. Several of his supporters have been suspended from their party membership, and their would-be successors are either blocked from standing for Parliament or are leaving altogether. It's not what Keir Starmer promised to do back in 2020, of course. Then he called Jeremy Corbyn a friend and pledged to keep most of his policies. Back then, it was enough to win endorsements from influential left-wingers and a landslide leadership victory. But 4 years to the week since his election, does the left have any future whatsoever in this new model Labour Party? The likes of Owen Jones, the Guardian columnist, who you heard from there, and more than 100 councillors say no. But do they have an electoral future outside the party? And just how isolated have they become within it? We're going to hear from a panel of three people with unique perspectives on that big question. But before then, let's speak to Christabel Cooper, who's Director of Research at Labour Together. Hi, Christabel.
Hi, Patrick.
You've been researching Labour's voting base. Labour Together has. Obviously, you're a think tank that's broadly supportive of the Labour leadership, and you've done very detailed work on the voters Keir Starmer is targeting, splitting them into different segments based on what they think. Broadly speaking, how big of the bit is the electorate that you would say hold what we might describe as left-wing, Corbynite sort of views?
Well, there's a lot of people in Britain who hold quite economically left-wing views. There's a smaller number of people who hold both the kind of economically left-wing views and the very socially liberal views that I think Jeremy Corbyn represented. So out of our six clusters that we identified, we found one called the Activist Left, which is a very socially liberal, very left-wing cluster. And that's, you know, less than a sixth of the electorate. It's an important part of Labour's coalition, but it's by far from the only part that would help Labour get to a general election victory.
And what do those voters think now? Are they still largely backing the Labour Party, or are you seeing more and more of them defect to, say, the Green Party, which is an increasingly popular destination for left-wingers who become disenchanted with Keir Starmer? How is Keir Starmer doing among that sort of activist left segment of the electorate?
So we're actually seeing higher numbers of the activist left intending to vote for Labour right now than they did in the general election of 2019. In part, I think some of them genuinely didn't particularly like Jeremy Corbyn. Others were probably voting tactically for Remain supporting parties. But certainly, we haven't seen any big damage done among that particular segment for Keir Starmer at the moment.
So that's the situation in the country. Let's look briefly at the situation within the Labour Party. Labour Together regularly polls the Labour membership, as I understand it. Are Labour members backing Keir Starmer?
Yes, they are. And the reason they're backing Keir Starmer is that more than ever of them believe that Labour is on course for a general election victory. So it's not surprising that they are pretty supportive of a leader that, you know, quite incredibly, after 5 years, after a really serious election defeat, after which I think most people didn't think that Labour stood a chance of coming back within one electoral term, is now taking us within sight of a victory.
And it's very interesting, though, isn't it? Because since Keir Starmer became leader of the Labour Party, or rather since Jeremy Corbyn's tenure ended, the big, big membership numbers we associated with Jeremy Corbyn, more than 500,000 Labour members, have fallen pretty markedly. Labour's ruling National Executive Committee here reports on that every time they meet. Is the sort of the idea that, say, I think it's 4/5 of Labour members, 80% of Labour members are now big supporters of Keir Starmer, partly a consequence of that? Labour members who are sort of further to the left than Keir Starmer are taking their leave and leaving behind them a party that is much more explicitly supportive of the leader?
Well, I mean, you see membership numbers rise and fall in response to different events. But yes, I think we are seeing some of those more left-wing people leaving the party.
Well, Christabel Cooper, Director of Research at Labour Together, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That gives you an idea of what the situation looks like for the left in the country and within the Labour Party. But as Christabel was saying, as we were discussing there, part of the reason why the Labour membership is so overwhelmingly supportive of Keir Starmer is because those who are inclined to support him are leaving, or many of them are. So with that in mind, is Keir Starmer doing the right thing by moving away from the left? And are the left, if they want to influence the future direction of a Labour government, doing the right thing in leaving? Well, let's discuss this with three people who know more about this situation than most. Matt Zarb-Cousin is a former spokesman for Jeremy Corbyn. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Patrick.
Luke Akehurst is a member of Labour's National Executive Committee and Secretary of Labour First. Hi, Luke.
Hi. And Paul Mason is an author and journalist who helped Keir Starmer win the 2020 Labour leadership election. Hiya, Paul.
Great to be here.
Thanks very much for joining us, Paul. Matt, I'll start with you. As I said, you worked for Jeremy Corbyn. You worked for Labour MPs basically from the moment you left university too. So you've been around the Labour Party for a long time, but you're also one of the first people with a degree of public profile who had worked for Jeremy Corbyn to leave the Labour Party for the Greens, in your case, as Laura Parker, who endorsed Keir Starmer in 2020, recently said she would vote for the Greens if she lived in Bristol. Owen Jones, of course, has quit the Labour Party and is working on a project to support left-wing Labour MPs, Green candidates, independent candidates to the left of Labour. But you were sort of a first mover, an early adopter of this theory. Why did you come to that decision, having, you know, worked for a left-wing Labour leader and having seen, you know, what the left could do, or rather what it couldn't do when it was in charge of the party?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. As well as working for Jeremy, I worked on Rebecca Long Bailey's leadership campaign. And during that campaign, it was extremely difficult to find any dividing lines on policy with Keir Starmer. He basically repeated everything that the Rebecca campaign stood on in terms of its platform, and has since reneged on all 10 pledges that he made in the course of that campaign in order to win over those that voted for Jeremy in previous leadership contests.
And those 10 pledges were, you know, renationalisation of utilities, taking a sort of tough line on foreign military intervention, rather, you know, a tough line against it, requiring MPs to vote, all that sort of thing.
Patrick, it was even things like closing Yarl's Wood. I mean, that's how left-wing he was in that campaign, right? So closing detention centres, and the idea that he would actually stand on that platform now. He's a different politician to the one in 2020 that stood as Jeremy Corbyn's policies, but with a, you know, more professional, perhaps different type of delivery. That was the platform that he stood on. And that policy platform has a lot of popularity in the country across all demographics. And it wasn't the policy agenda that was the issue for Labour in 2019. It was Brexit and the fact that Jeremy, after years and years of sustained attacks, was a very unpopular leader at that particular time. It wasn't the policies. And unfortunately, what Starmer has done is he's deviated significantly from the agenda that he stood on, that he had a mandate for, to be leader of the Labour Party. And frankly, I disagree with the previous caller, because really, it's not a surprise that Labour are miles ahead in the polls. We've had a pandemic. We've had several prime ministers, Tory prime ministers. We've had Liz Truss. It's been a disaster for the country, this last government. And it's not a surprise that the opposition is ahead. What I would caution against is that being a validation of the leader and of the platform that he's standing on, which is pretty sparse as it stands. I think really the more that people take a look at Keir Starmer and the more that people take a look at Labour's offer or lack thereof, they're either not going to support them in the general election, or they're going to be very, very disappointed if they do get into government. So from my perspective, from, you know, left-wing perspective, and from the perspective of the country, I don't think it's a good thing for Labour to get a massive majority and therefore have a mandate to do whatever they like, because frankly, they could do anything. I mean, based on Starmer's track record of keeping promises, they could do anything in government. And I, at the moment, it looks like they're going to maintain the status quo. It looks like they're going to keep Tory economic policies to a large extent. And that's a disaster for the country. So in order to exert pressure on them, that has to be done external to the party. There's no channels, democratic channels within the party. Even selections now are stitched up for parliamentary selections. MPs are not decided by local constituency Labour parties. Well, if they are given a choice, it's from a shortlist of one. So frankly, you know, the only way you can really exert pressure on this leadership is outside of the party. So that's why I think it's a good idea for people to, if they're left-wing, to leave.
Well, Luke Akehurst, let me bring you in. You've spent many, many years, I won't put too fine a point on it, organising in the Labour Party, basically to beat people like Matt Zarb-Cousin, who we've just heard from. From your perspective, you must listen to people like Matt saying, they've given up on the democratic structure of the Labour Party, trying to bring the Labour Party to a more left-wing position, and think, that's fantastic, that's made your job easier. Is that right?
Well, it doesn't show much staying power, does it? I hung around throughout the Corbyn years because I had a vision of what I wanted the Labour Party to look like, a party that was connected to the values and the politics that the mainstream of the British electorate wanted. And I stayed and I fought for that. And eventually I got a Labour Party that I was happy with. And these guys were here when everyone was singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." And then the minute it's got tough, a lot of them have disappeared off to the Greens. I want a broad church Labour Party. I'm not personally hostile to people on the left. I've got a lot of friends who sit on the Corbynite left who I get on very well with on a personal level. The only people I want outside the Labour Party are people that are Leninists who don't belong in a democratic socialist or social democratic party, and people that are anti-Semitic who we or any other kind of racist who we need to expel. So I think it's actually, yeah, they're cutting off their noses to spite their face by leaving. How, you know, I'm sat there going, oh, well, I've got an NEC election that I've got to win this summer. People leaving the party who disagree with my politics and making it easier for me to get re-elected.
I want to bring Paul Mason in just a moment, Luke, but I just wanted to put what Matt's old cousin said about the sort of leadership of the Labour Party stitching stuff up to exclude the left, and it's not been a fair fight. What would you say to that? Because, you know, Matt was saying, and this is something you hear time and time again from people on the left of the Labour Party, that the leadership of the Labour Party and its allies in the National Executive Committee, yourself included, are stitching stuff up. It's not a fair fight. What do you say to that from Matt?
I think people have had to win very hard fought selection contests would be surprised to hear that, you know, it was all done on shortlists of one, or they didn't, it was all stitched up for them. It's still extremely competitive. But I make no apology for there being a degree of political judgment that goes into long listing that we do. First of all, we're doing due diligence and trying to make sure that we don't have incidents like what happened in Rochdale, where you get a candidate that lets us down. Incidentally, you're not a candidate from the left that let us down in that instance. But also trying to make sure that we end up with a PLP who has supported the leadership. There's no point winning by 35 seats and then it turns out that there's 35 members of the campaign group who are going to persistently break the whip. That means that we haven't got a stable majority to govern. And if there was a hung parliament in that situation, how could you negotiate with other parties if you can't guarantee that all of your MPs are going to vote the right way? So I do think it's something that we should exercise political judgment about. Are people actually going to be good, loyal Labour MPs? It's not about the views that they have. It's about whether they put their personal views to one side and vote with the party that got them elected.
Paul Mason, Tony Benn used to say Labour wasn't a socialist party. It was a party with socialists in it. You know, Labour's always been at a broader ideological tradition than just socialism. But that's a whole other radio programme. But you must be... Do you sometimes feel, listening to some of the people you served with on Keir Starmer's leadership campaign of the left, Laura Parker saying, you know, a vote for the Greens wasn't necessarily the craziest thing in the world. You had people like Simon Fletcher, another left-winger who worked on Keir Starmer's leadership campaign. He's not left the Labour Party, but he's been speaking about how working on Keir Starmer's leadership campaign was a dead end for the left. I mean, how do you feel about that? You know, where do you stand 4 years later as a influential left-winger who worked for Keir Starmer, and you've seen the political direction of his leadership tilt in a rather different direction?
Well, when I see the number 44% on a recent opinion poll, I feel very happy, because the reason I supported Keir Starmer wasn't particularly to do with the 10 pledges. It was to do with the kind of leader we needed to have and the kind of political strategy we needed in order to claw things back. Because I don't believe 2019 was just about Brexit. It was about a party leadership that had lost touch with the way working class people think and speak and the stuff they worry about. And I knew that Keir could put us back where we are. See, the argument in 2019, 2020 was we need 10 years out of power. We need to become a kind of liberal party. And that's what some of the kind of old supporters of Tony Blair were saying. Now, I said, and I think Keir said this, we can turn it around in 5 years if we do economic radicalism and a traditional Labour offer on things like defence, security, immigration, crime. And that's what Labour's five missions are all about. You know, high growth, clean energy, safe streets, free healthcare, first-class education for your kids, and that's it. That, I think, is enough for voters to process right now because they're under such pressure and under such worry about their own economic circumstances. So I think we're about where I'd like us to be. I think that another thing saying to the people who, yeah, there were some left-wing people who supported Keir along with me, is where we are has changed. We're, you know, the COVID epidemic put a huge dent in the public finances. We've then got Ukraine, you know, a major war with a totalitarian dictatorship. We have to reprioritize. And one of the things I'm confident about is that Keir Starmer's government will lead a mission of national transformation, but it will do so around the priorities that matter now. And I just say to people leaving, you know, not only are you losing your leverage, but the most important thing is, you know, 110 years ago when Labour Party was founded, trade unionists worked out that, and I'm a lifelong trade unionist, you know, if you want pressure on government, the best way to have that pressure for your workplace issues, for the issues around organisation and representation, is within a party that can be a government. It's all very well voting for the Greens. The Greens are not going to form a government. They may struggle to even get an MP, unfortunately for them. But if you want to, if you want to share a voice and you are, say, a delivery rider or a railway worker today, that share of voice in government is only going to come through Keir Starmer's Labour Party.
Are you convinced by any of that, Matt Tolcousin?
Well, I think it's a problem on multiple levels. I think all of this, all of the signs since Keir became leader have suggested that there is no intention for the type of economic radicalism that Paul's just gestured towards. I don't think that that's a credible reading of where the Labour Party's heading. I think that he himself has a credibility problem. I think that he is very, not a strong leader. There's a perception that he gets pulled around a lot, based, you know, what position he wants to take is sort of the expedient one. I think without question, the Labour Party now has been captured to some degree by not the types of, you know, interests that Paul's talking about, the trade unions and you know, social movements. It's been captured by corporate invested interests. And I think that if you look at a lot of the parliamentary candidate selections, if you look at a lot of the links that certain advisors have to certain lobbying firms, it's very, very clear the direction of travel that the Labour Party is going in. And I think it's not, and to say that we, you know, a Labour government's going to deliver X, Y, Z, I just don't believe that that's the case. I don't believe that's what they want to do. I don't believe that's what they believe in. So they're absolutely free to do whatever they like if they win an election, and I'm sure that they will. But I don't believe it's the sort of things that the country needs. And I think in order to get them to do the things the country needs, you don't do that by just voting for them regardless. You have to take away you have to use your bargaining power. You have to use your leverage. And your leverage is, we're not going to vote for you if you don't do those things.
Paul, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, I think let's take Labour's Green Prosperity Plan. Okay, it is still, despite being, yes, slimmed down, it's the most radical green energy plan ever presented by a mainstream party. We're talking about, you know, a state-owned energy company. We're talking about £3 billion worth of money to be thrown at local energy projects, like, you know, the combined heat and power, trapping the heat that comes out of the London Underground, that kind of stuff. We are looking at an NHS workforce plan that will put, you know, tens of thousands of extra NHS workers. We're talking about quadrupling offshore wind. We're talking about extra solar, onshore wind. All of this stuff is what we need to achieve net zero. It's what we need to achieve social justice. And so the argument isn't, you know, is Labour's programme radical enough? I can think of things I'd like them to do more on for definite. But is this a party that's going to change the weather to empower working class people to seek their own social justice, where they live in their own community. And I believe it is. And fine, you know, there are other parties have a right to form and campaign against us, but that's different from saying you don't want a Labour government or you want a small Labour government that's susceptible to all kinds of pressure from outside. It's not just the left, by the way. There's all kinds of there's all kinds of pressures that will come on a Labour government in an era of very tough geopolitical situation. Look at Gaza, you look at Ukraine. We need, you know, I think Labour, you can read Labour like a stick of rot. You can see Starmer, what he stands for, what he's going to do. He cares about the environment. He cares about crime. Crime's a working class issue. We're going to sort that. I think that's what's resonating on doorsteps in the kind of places. Look, to be honest, in 2019, I went through what's called the Red Wall. I campaigned for Labour. It was the most depressing experience. And I know from my colleagues and comrades in the Labour Party that right now on the doorstep, in the north of England, in the Midlands, it's a much different experience because we've actually listened to people and turned their hopes and aspirations into a programme for government.
And Luke Akers, a final word from you. If left-wingers are listening to this and they're mulling over their futures in the Labour Party and they're listening to Matt's old cousin and Paul Mason, who is right about how happy a home the Labour Party and the Keir Starmer can be to people who are supporters of Jeremy Corbyn? Or is it, as Simon Fletcher said, a political dead end?
Well, I don't think it's the job of a political party to make its members happy. It's the job of a political party is to be to deliver the policy changes that the ordinary people that back it need and to be popular enough to get into power to do that. I've certainly not been involved in the Labour Party because I wanted to be I wanted it to make me happy. I think if you identify with the values of the Labour Party, which are unchanging over 100 years, they're about social justice and about working people getting a fair share of the cake and about rights in the workplace and everything else, then you should be in the large political party that has the possibility of taking the responsibility of being in government and actually doing something about all of those things. It's really easy to be incredibly happy and be off in the Greens or a fringe left party and your conscience to be completely clear because you never make any compromise with reality or with what voters think. But what does that achieve in politics? Politics is about getting into power and changing things. And if you want to be part of that, being the Labour Party, sure, there might be moments of a bit of disappointment or you don't get 100% of what you want. But actually being there in government, changing things is the key thing. It's about whether your mentality of getting into politics is about doing things or protesting about things that other people do.
Patrick McGuire, InfoMatchorley here on Times Radio, where we're asking whether the left should leave the Labour Party. Well, the polls say that Keir Starmer is currently set to take the keys to number 10 without much fuss. At the weekend, we saw a 15,000-person poll in the Sunday Times suggest the Tories will win just 98 seats to Labour's 468. So with all these new candidates, you've heard from Matt Zarb, cousin, the former spokesman to Jeremy Corbyn, and Luke Akehurst, a supporter of Keir Starmer who sits on the party's national executive. You've heard about how all these people are broadly supportive of Keir Starmer, not many left-wingers in their number. What kind of party will they be sitting for in Parliament? Michael Crick, the veteran political journalist who's been tracking party selections, joins me now. Michael, is there any future for left-wingers who hope to stand for the Labour Party in Parliament?
Well, not at this election, I don't think. They're faced with the choice, really. Do they carry on and hope that things will change at, you know, in subsequent years, 5 or 10 years' time, under perhaps a new leader? I mean, you know, the Labour Party does bounce back and forth between left and right. But I think the right have got a grip on the party, or the Labour right, have got a grip on the party. There's greater than ever before, greater even than in the 1950s. And there are all sorts of people who became Labour MPs in those days, became, you know, joined cabinets. People, I mean, Nye Bevan, for instance, wouldn't have a hope today. Robin Cook probably wouldn't have a. John Prescott, even Angela Rayner, I don't think would have been selected as a Labour candidate under the recent round of selections. The left have been pretty much purged. there's only about five candidates you could say are on the left. Interestingly, actually, one of them is Chris Webb, who's going to be fighting the Blackpool South by-election. He's fighting the Blackpool South by-election for the party. There's a little crescent of left-wingers in that part of Lancashire. But it's extraordinary how few left-wingers have been chosen. Early on, I think they got the message that they would be purged from the long lists and the short lists on often the slightest pretext. And most of them gave up applying, going through a selection process is time consuming and expensive. They knew that they would suffer humiliation. It would be that they would be rebuffed. And so they've given up trying, most of them. And some of them have left the party. But whether they'll bounce back, well, the history of Labour suggests they may well do, in a sense of huge disillusionment after the next Labour government. That's the normal pattern that we've seen over the years. But the right, Starmer and the right, really are in total control right now. The number of left-wing MPs in Parliament will be very few.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits. That's all we got time for. I've been Patrick Maguire. I'm with you all this week, and I'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, make sure you like, share, subscribe, and follow wherever you get your podcast from.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.